Let's look into Wharton's Executive MBA options. Who is Wharton's EMBA program for, and how do you, as an applicant, show it's for you? Welcome to the 283rd episode of Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" Not only in, but in the best program for you. This episode of Admissions Straight Talk is brought to you by ACE the EMBA by Accepted Consultant Cindy Tokumitsu. This free guide will help you navigate the road to an executive MBA acceptance. Grab your copy at www.accepted.com/ACEEMBA or in our show notes at www.accepted.com/283. Again, that's an ACE EMBA is ACEEMBA. So what are Wharton's executive MBA options? Who is Wharton's EMBA program for, and how do you, as an applicant, show it's for you? We're going to speak with Barbara Kraft and Diane Sharp, both directors of admissions at Wharton's executive MBA programs located in Philadelphia and San Francisco. Barbara and Diane, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Can you share just a bit about the history of Wharton's executive MBA program? Obviously, there's the Philadelphia, there's San Francisco. How did the whole thing work out?
Sure, I'd be happy to take that. This is Barb Kraft, Director of Admissions in San Francisco. And the University of Pennsylvania, of course, has been around a very long time. It was founded in 1740 by Benjamin Franklin. And the Wharton School was the first collegiate business school in the United States, founded in 1881. And I mention this because we were also one of the first to have a format for working professionals get their MBA. And that was actually 45 years ago, started in Philadelphia.
Wow.
And we've offered the program as well in San Francisco now for almost 20 years. We launched in San Francisco in 2001. So we have a really long history of running a program in a format for working professionals. And we're the only actually Ivy League school offering the MBA on the West Coast. So we're one of eight Ivies and the only offering the MBA for executives on the West Coast.
Okay, great. Diane, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think the history is complete there. And we've been together since I was around since the launching of the San Francisco program. And it's just really enhanced the student body and we can have a further reach. Professors really, really appreciate being able to fly back and forth in Philadelphia and San Francisco.
I was just going to add, if there is anything that we're really particularly proud of at the Wharton School is that our MBA for executives is the same MBA as our full-time MBA program in terms of the same number of credit hours, the same faculty, as Diane said, they teach both East and West executive students, and the same academic rigor and content. So in no way is it MBA light. They're really earning that Wharton MBA.
They work hard.
For sure. Yes.
Okay. And that kind of leads to just a very, very basic question. Who should go for a regular full-time MBA and who should go for the Wharton executive program?
Yeah, there are a lot of good reasons for choosing either. But in general, what we find is professionals who are further along in their career generally aim for the executive format. They're at a point in their career where they've been, their trajectory has been strong. They're at the cusp of maybe the higher level management. They really prefer not to jump off their career and take 2 years of, you know, losing that time to continue in the trajectory. So, and sometimes it's a life issue too. They're further along than they've got families and they don't want to take 2 years off and move. So generally you also have to have the buy-in from your company because it's going to impact workday. So oftentimes the companies are more than happy to say, great, would love for you to not leave us and to continue growing with us and learn more things. So that also relates to the fact that those who go to the full-time program tend to be they're more junior, and they want to make a bigger switch. They're there to have an internship in between year one and year two, and to try something new, perhaps, and make maybe a 180 degree change at the end of it all. So that would not be the model that we would use in the executive program, because you're working. It's a requirement of our program. You're continuing, you're applying what you're learning week in, week out, and it's making you grow. And yes, students are definitely making changes through our program, but it's more of a place in your career that it makes sense. And we encourage people to really flesh it out and make sure if you want Wharton and you're right for Wharton, you're in the right program for you.
What is the, I forgot to look it up before the call, what is the average age for matriculants in the executive MBA program?
The average age runs around 35, 36. Uh-huh. That's 11 to 12 years of full-time work experience.
Got it. So that would also distinguish, let's say, from a typical part-time program. It really is for more people who are a little bit more advanced.
Exactly. We like to see, we prefer to see, you know, close to 8 years of work experience if someone's looking at the program.
Okay. Yeah, with management in there too. We would not be interested in anybody who hasn't led some teams, had management to some degree in their career already.
Okay. Now, what are the distinctive elements of Wharton's executive MBA program vis-a-vis other executive MBA programs?
I think one thing that really stands out for our program is that we are one program, two locations. So we span the country. Whether people are applying to the East Coast cohort or the West Coast cohort, they all start the program together in Philadelphia as one large group. So while Diana is busy admitting a class, I'm busy admitting a class, we start off orientation together in Philadelphia on main campus, and then everyone goes back to their respective coast for the first year of the program, and they go through the core together. There's then a time in later on in the first year of the program where the East Coast cohort will come west for a week-long marketing simulation class. And then in year two, when it comes to our Global Business Week, we offer up four different locations for that Global Business residency. And both our East and West Coast students choose among those four trips. So again, there's that nice merging between East and West, as well as in the second year of the program, students can take electives on either the East Coast or the West Coast, or they could take a whole term East or West. So there's a lot of option and a lot of choice in year two. We have the largest selection of electives of pretty much any business school in the world because we have a very large, robust faculty. So in no way are our students limited. They're able to kind of craft the MBA, actually major, specialize if they would like. And again, you know, even do 1 year of the program East and then the second year West or vice versa. And that way we're able to draw from students from all over the country. And in some cases we have students that come to the program from other countries.
Really?
Yeah, in San Francisco, we have someone who commutes in from Singapore, if you can imagine. And we have we have three students who come in from Mexico. You on the East.
We have a woman who comes from Copenhagen to Philadelphia with someone from Jamaica.
Wow.
Yeah, very fortunate. So yeah, that makes us special.
As long as you can make it there every other week, as long as a plane, train, or automobile gets you there, you can be involved in the program.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. What are you looking for in Wharton Executive MBA candidates?
Sure. And I can't stress this enough, as Barb mentioned in the outset, we are offering the Wharton MBA. So we have the same admissions requirements as the full-time counterpart. Our professors have the same expectations, if not more, because our students are bringing a lot to the class. So we're looking, of course, for the academic foundation to succeed. And we have to make sure that the individuals we admit have the energy to hit the same academic standards while they're working and while many of them have families and other things in their lives. So it's a lot to be able to handle it. So individuals who show a history of always wanting to be challenged. Academics first and foremost are important. But we don't have a set expectation of where you're coming from. Often people are a bit concerned that they don't see their particular industry or function on our statistical page, but that doesn't mean we don't want you. It's just not a big feeder for us because it might not be de rigueur. So we want you to check us out if you want an MBA. We love to see diversity in any way we can get it. Geographic, as we mentioned, industry, functions, you name it. So
what about goals?
Absolutely. And actually, Barb and I were having a discussion about this last night. We, of course, will want to know about your goals when we interview you, when you fill out your application and answer that question. We also want you to come in with an open mind. So we see students who've come in thinking this is where they're headed, and they take a class or meet a classmate and realize, wow, this is something I hadn't considered. And then they head off in a different direction, which is absolutely fine. You have to have some, you know, degree of reflection when you join us, but open-minded is very important as well.
Direction is important. Now, you mentioned academics as a requirement. Is the GMAT?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
The GMAT is definitely required. We also accept the GRE, and we just started piloting the EA, the executive assessment, for applicants with 10 or year more work experience. So we do have that requirement. If they're going to take the EA, we like to see that they have at least 10 years of work experience. GMAT has been a test that we've always used, so we're very familiar with that one as well. But a standardized test is required of every applicant, regardless of whether they have a PhD or other advanced degree. We don't waive it in any circumstance. However, it is one piece of the application, so we're really looking at that along with their work experience and their level of support and their transcripts, not just in terms of their GPAs and the academic rigor of the institution they attended.
Is a GRE also a possible possibility?
Yes, okay. GRE is also possible. And we started piloting the executive assessment last year. And with the executive assessment, we do require applicants to have at minimum 10 years of work experience before we'll consider an EA score.
Okay. And is it correct to assume that if, let's say, one is applying, let's say, you know, their undergraduate transcript isn't quite what they wanted it to be, that the test score takes on more importance?
Yes, absolutely. Because with our applicants, some of them, you know, their undergraduate was 20 years ago.
Right.
And a lot of them might not even remember what their GPA is. I mean, I know I couldn't. So in that case, if someone did not perform as well as they would have liked, the GMAT can be a great redeeming factor, right? Because it's a current indicator of their academic abilities. And so we are going to look at the standardized tests relative to the transcripts. And if someone didn't have real strong grades undergrad and it was a long time ago, they need to rock that GMAT because that's going to show us that they have that academic ability to be, you know, hold their own in the classroom.
Okay. What about sponsorship? Is it recommended, required, nice to have, but strictly optional?
We require sponsorship. In fact, it's required at the time of your application. We don't admit you and then ask you to get sponsorship. Sponsorship comes in many forms. It's pretty much different for every individual because often we do get asked, is there a template for the letter of sponsorship? And we do not have one because we see such a wide variety of companies and different scenarios and agreement types for sponsorship. The minimum level of sponsorship that needs to be acknowledged by everyone is that the time would be made available. So the company, whoever has the authority to sign a letter, sometimes it's someone's direct boss or their HR or the division head, it's different for every company, they'll write up a letter and say, we know he or she's applying, and if admitted, we would support that time. We want to make sure they know that this individual should be in San Francisco or Philadelphia, basically two Fridays a month, with some other exceptions for the calendar. Then there's the level of sponsorship that's financial. That is also, we see everything from 0 to 100%.
Wow.
And in today's economy, yeah, we're not seeing as much of the 100% as we used to when these programs first started. So again, that's an agreement that you make with your company. They acknowledge how much it is. We do have a requirement for financial sponsorship for individuals who are what we call fellows candidates. That is if they have less than 8 years. So basically the resume would also reflect someone who might be a viable candidate for a full-time program. So we would want those individuals to have financial sponsorship from their company. At least 50% of the cost needs to be covered by their company, because if the company's not investing you, and you are at the lower end of that career, that experience level, then the full-time program might be a better option for you.
Got it. All right, that makes sense. And but the time sponsorship is required. The financial sponsorship is optional, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Except for fellows, the folks with less than 8 years who do need it.
Okay. Now, Wharton Executive Program has 4 essay questions, correct? A goals question, a question about giving and taking in the program or to the program, a question about managing the time demands of the executive MBA, and an optional where Wharton invites applicants to explain any extenuating circumstances. They're obviously very different questions. Can you kind of go and explain the rationale behind each of these questions, the reasons behind them? I sometimes think, I've said this before on the show, but you may not have heard it. I said it that I think applicants think that sometimes the questions or the elements requesting the application are almost random. Maybe it's tradition. And like, how does it all fit together? So would you mind going into that a little bit?
I always like to tell applicants, you'll put a lot of time and attention into your application, but please know that we will too. So people should be looking at these essay questions really thoughtfully. And it's an opportunity for them, I think, to really kind of hone in whether they are ready for this, whether, you know, circumstances that we're asking about, do they have this under control? You know, what kind of person are they? Because when we are reading these essays, that's what we're trying to understand. Is this person a good fit? Is this the right time in their life to get an MBA? So the best advice I can always give people when thinking about their essays is that they'll write and rewrite, and they should be a time where they're being very reflective, but more than anything, to be themselves. We really want to know the true applicant. We don't want answers to the essays that they think just we want to hear, if that makes sense. Don't tell us just, you know, we do have those people who, you know, write on and on complimenting the Wharton School, and that's very nice. We appreciate that. Or all the
you know you have a great program, right? You don't need to hear it.
All the things that they feel are great about the Wharton School, but what we really want to know is about them. We know about the Wharton School.
Right.
And so it's really important that we're able to hear that applicant's voice through each of these answers. We do have an optional essay that gives them an opportunity to explain something if they would like that they feel may not be coming across, or that they haven't been given an opportunity to share. We have that optional essay. You know, going back to the undergraduate performance, a lot of times people might use that optional essay question for that to explain, you know, some circumstance that may have been happening during undergraduate that, you know, had an impact on their performance, you know, whether it was an illness or maybe they were just having way too much fun, whatever it is, someone who has that kind of extenuating circumstance should use option 4 essay to explain it, because it won't be overlooked. So when we have someone who has maybe a gap, let's say, in their resume or poor performance in undergraduate, and they don't take advantage of answering essay question number 4 to explain that, don't think it's going to be missed. On the other hand, we don't want someone to use essay question number 4 and answer it just because they think they need to answer it. It's really meant to be. We got plenty of reading to do. It's just really meant to be bring in a different perspective.
And what about essays 1, 2, and 3? What are the reasons behind those? What's the why behind them?
Yeah, each of them is actually coming from a different angle. The first one being, what are your goals? Why do you want the MBA? We want to make sure that you do have some idea, because as we want you to be open-minded, but you don't have a lot of time to look around. You have to make sure that what you want is what we offer. So it's that self-reflection. And then I want to reinforce what Barb said, that yes, we're the Wharton School, and don't have your essay edited so much that it's taken your voice out of it, and you don't have to feel like you have to swallow the Wall Street Journal just because you want to hear your voice. And some people are so worried about missing an apostrophe or a typo or something that, again, they're just overly edited, and you know, we're admitting humans.
Right.
The essay number two is the one we tend to change from time to time. It's one more that is a very unique one that hopefully will reflect someone's uniqueness. There's no right or wrong answer. Again, we really want people who are self-aware. So we want to know that they're thinking about things in a unique way. And that a lot of folks really appreciate having that opportunity. And that third
essay two also allow you to see at least a little bit whether they've done their homework into the Wharton program and how they think the Wharton program can help support them, as well as what they can contribute to it or to the student body, not the program itself?
Very, very much so. It's such an interactive program that everyone's voice is important. And there's, again, no right or wrong. We just want to know what voice you're going to have. What are you bringing to student with your classmates and the professors? Like, you know, Adam Grant being the type of professor who's so well published, but he's a very good representative of the Wharton School. And because he's not from the typical background that you would think Wharton to be, we want people to be aware that they're going to be challenged in a lot of ways other than just you know, financial statements and so forth. So it's kind of a fun thing for us.
Right. And then the third question about time management.
And it forces you hopefully to think about it. It's maybe not surprising how many people will write, you know, I'm good at juggling things, I'm always busy, but we realize they don't mention the fact that they've got buy-in from their boss, that they know who they're going to delegate their work to at work, because they're not going to be able to hit the mark as much as they would. Or if we see someone mentions, oh yeah, I have a wife and family in their application, but there's no mention that they have buy-in from, you know, their spouse. So we really want people to sit there. We don't expect flow charts of every hour of every week. Who knows? We've seen them.
I guess we've both probably seen quite a bit. But no, I know that it's very hard to go to work almost full time and then have a part time graduate program. You have to be ready for it. And I guess you want to see that they're ready for it. They've thought about it and know how they're going to handle it.
Exactly. That's planning.
Yeah. Planning. And I think you're right. It takes also the support, a supportive boss, a supportive spouse or significant other. Both parties have to be on board if they're, you know, if you have those. What are your admissions deadlines and when does the program start? How does that work? The calendar, just the very basics.
So we admit one class per year that starts the end of May. And for that class, we have two admission deadlines. Our first coming up December the 5th, and our second is February the 6th. And there's no particular weight put on one deadline versus the other. We always tell people shoot for the deadline that works best for you. I like to encourage people to shoot for around one deadline so that if for any reason, you know, there are some pieces that are out of your control with the application, like letters of recommendation or whatnot. So if you can't possibly pull it off for the first deadline, then you still have that second deadline. Because once that second deadline has passed, you're then looking at it the following year.
Right. That makes sense. I also sometimes tell applicants that that they should apply for the first round possible, provided they don't compromise the quality of the application. There's no first round application if your application is, there's no first round advantage if your application isn't good. That's just the basics. Would you like to tell me a little bit about your students in the MBA program for executives?
Yeah, I think we alluded to some of them. Geographically, we get some coming in from many parts of the world, and even those who may be based in the U.S., many of them are not U.S. citizens originally. So the classmates that you're going to have are going to be very diverse. And we have quite a variety of industries represented. It's actually the pie of industries, healthcare, you know, with biotech. We also have physicians. We have attorneys. We've had veterinarians. We have many, many, over half in this first year class have already have an advanced degree. It's amazing. We've got consultants, engineers. We get folks from public sector, military. And then you'll just see them represented in different proportions in the two classes, San Francisco versus Philadelphia.
I would assume that Philadelphia has more financial services types and San Francisco has more high tech types. Am I correct or am I just generalizing?
I think you're correct in terms of our applicant pool. And tech, we definitely will get more tech applicants. I might get more finance applicants. But when it comes to the selection process, we try to keep those classes as diverse as possible. So sometimes, as far as tech is concerned, you know, we may have more tech companies, but the person's functional role may be, you know, CMO of a tech company. So
right.
I encourage applicants always to look at function as much as they look at company.
Industry, right. Okay. And can you maybe tell me, I mean, you can even look at recent alumni perhaps of the program, some interesting stories or success stories perhaps, either in terms of somebody successfully advancing their own company, starting a new company, changing careers, advancing their careers. Anybody stand out?
I think we probably have each a couple examples from our respective classes. The one that we like to point to first is the CEO of Johnson & Johnson.
That's a pretty good one.
And he's a really great alumnus, and he really just supports the program ever since he graduated in the late 90s, I believe. Yeah. And we see him a lot. We have at the other end of the spectrum, and we're seeing more and more of this, folks who start companies. So an individual who I saw in New York last week graduated 4 years ago, and he and a classmate started a company, and it has to do with the basically online video space. It was bought by another company pretty soon after they graduated, but then that company is recently bought by ABC. So it's basically an entrepreneur's dream come true. So he was ready to look for the next thing.
Yeah, same on the San Francisco side. Lots of successes there as well. I was just on the phone the other day with an alum who has taken over. When he was in the program, he was with Caesars, and he just took over as CMO of PetSmart. And
wow.
He's having a great time. He says he feels like he has landed in the place that he has always should have been, and attributes a lot of that to the Wharton Network and the education that he received to make that kind of transition.
Fantastic. Speaking of the network, go ahead.
If you don't mind, I'd love to share why so many of our students are able to do what they do. Of course, they're coming in as very bright and very motivated, loving challenges, but they also get the support of the career management team that's really special, really tailored for their needs. It's Steve Hernandez in San Francisco, Dr. Dawn Graham in Philadelphia, and they're supported by Karina, who it's almost as if each of our students has an individual career coach, and they are giving our students the tools to manage their careers for a lifetime. It's not that model on the on-campus recruiting that full-time programs have. They're teaching you how to network, how to use the Wharton Network, figuring out what it is you want to do. It's so much programming in the 2 years, and then it continues afterwards, that our students who have the time to take full advantage of it are really benefiting.
It really develops a personal brand, for sure.
So they're getting all this coaching, this individual coaching. Is this for all executive MBA students? Are the sponsored students, do they still have access to that or no?
They do. They have access to all of our career services. other than placing their resume in the resume, the Wharton resume book, or doing on-campus recruiting unless they receive a letter from their company. But as far as the approach from our career management, they really feel that as professionals, whether it's, you know, professionals that are sponsored by their companies or one who are self-paying, really should develop their personal brand and what they can offer to any company, you know, their current company, sure, or if they're looking to pivot or change.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a minute ago the networking opportunities among students. How much mixing, and you also started the call by saying that the executive MBA program starts off together, whether they officially in Philadelphia or in San Francisco, they start off together. How much mixing occurs throughout the program among the two different classes? And is there any mixing with the full-time MBA program students?
Yeah, sure, I can take that. With the full-time students, and I'll jump right in with that one, because we have a cohort of full-time students that do a semester in San Francisco in the fall and now in the spring each year. Just last weekend, we had a mixer between the executive students and the full-time students on Friday evening when the students finish class. Now, they don't mix in terms of academics, except for, in one particular case, in the elective portion of the program, when students are able to do global modular courses, which are offered by Wharton faculty in other places in the world. So they're intensive, like 3 to 7 day courses offered around the globe. Those are open to executive students, East and West, as well as full-time students. So on a global modular course, if a student would participate in that, they could be in any mix of audience.
Okay. Now, if someone lives in Kearney, Nebraska, which according to Travel Math is the best city closest to the halfway mark between San Francisco and Philadelphia, which program should they choose? Should they apply to Philadelphia or to San Francisco?
So yeah, this is Diane, and I'm happy to take that one because I actually lived in Lincoln, Nebraska for a couple of years.
Okay, okay.
And Kearney, Nebraska is a lovely town.
So, okay. And in fact, the real midpoint, by the way, was something called Dar, Nebraska, D-A-R-R, and it was unincorporated, and it didn't count to the population. So we're sticking with Kearney, okay?
Kearney map too, yes.
Kearney, okay.
There is University of Nebraska at Kearney. So, in fact, Barb and I are right now in Texas. So we recruit in the center of the country together. And
okay.
We tell folks, please, if you have the opportunity, check both campuses out. There's a lot of reasons people pick one over the other. There might be somebody who says, you know, I'm a financial manager and I'm coming from Kearney, and I want to be closer to more people. As you said, that there might be more in the finance industry. Some from Wall Street, so I'll go east. Others will say, well, you know what? I'm a finance manager. I see those folks every day. So I want to go to San Francisco, where I'm going to meet more people that are outside of my typical work. So
sure,
we'll have each reason. Sometimes it will be as straightforward as the schedules. Is it easier for you to catch a flight and gain 2 hours on a Thursday night or Friday morning, or, you know, 1 hour you lose when you go east? So that's sometimes flight schedules can do the deciding for you and your family situation. So ideally, you check out both if you can.
And it doesn't matter, as we said from the beginning, I mean, we're one big happy family program. whether you head east or west, in some cases it might be companies that people work with, mm-hmm, and that determines whether they're heading east or west, or family or friends that they have in one area versus the other. I'll give you a case. We have a student in the San Francisco class from New York, and he holds C-suite position in New York, but he's also opened a restaurant brewery in San Francisco and is in the middle of opening another one, and is looking to eventually relocate to the Bay Area. So he intentionally is flying from New York to San Francisco every other week to be with the San Francisco class to further build out his network and friendships in the Bay Area.
That makes, and obviously for him, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the nice thing is, too, you, as Barb stated on the outset, in the first year, you stay on the same campus you start with because you are in a team. Everyone is in a team for the core curriculum of the first year, but the second year, all bets are off. You can mix it up a little, and the folks in the center of the country have an advantage for that. So they can do a semester or one class or a whole year in the other coast.
Okay. Now, you both have been doing this for a while, and Barb, you mentioned that, you know, one thing that frustrates you is when people write what they think you want to read. What are some other common mistakes that applicants make?
One is to not engaging with us earlier in the process. Mm-hmm. We will get to our decision making, and Barb and I are in the same room during committee reading all the apps together, and we'll realize, ooh, if only we had known this person a month before, we could have remediated something. So we are very open to hearing from.
For example?
Let's say someone is taking the GMAT and has a mixed undergrad and an okay GMAT. You know, the competition is tough. It might be someone, if we'd only known a month before and had some advice to maybe retake the GMAT, we could have. But at some point when the class starts so quickly after our decisions are made, they're not going to have that advice. So we will give people feedback before they submit their application. We are absolutely encouraging people to have a chat. It's a 15-minute phone chat with Barb, myself, and several other members of the admissions committee to say, hey, you know, here's how I stand. Does this make sense for me? And we love it when people engage sooner than later, so they can really, we want to see everybody's best app put forward to us. So we love it when they do that. And if we if it's too late, we're always kind of regretting that.
Yeah, I can relate to that one. Barb, you have anything you want to add to that? You look very thoughtful there.
I am thinking about that in terms of, you know, again, people, reiterate, engaging with us early and to really be themselves. And we don't hesitate to tell people, you know, put the brakes on, you need to go back, maybe get some additional experience before you apply or whatnot. We're not really in the business of just collecting application fees. We get plenty of applicants. We would rather see the timing be right for the person. It is a big time commitment. You're asking your company to be on board with it. You're asking other significant people in your life to be on board with it. We want it to be a thoughtful process and a process in which they have the best opportunity of being admitted.
Do you have any, I want to use the word, how do reapplicants do at Wharton, Emba?
We always get people who miss the mark 1 year and they still are motivated. So once they engage with us again, we're happy to work with them. We want to make sure people, I wouldn't say it's a transparent process, but it's an open process, an interactive process. So we have our statistics out there. We want to make sure you understand what we're looking for in a successful candidate. So many people, as they go through it the next year and you're meeting again, because we want you to interview every year that you apply, they're realizing, I've had people say that, oh my gosh, I see how I came across last year. What, you know, if I'd started last year, it wouldn't have made sense. So it's like a eureka moment for them. Absolutely. We would encourage that, but don't do just rinse and repeat. Make sure you're reflecting.
Yeah. And in fact, that's one of the first things I say to somebody is, you know, what makes you a stronger candidate this year than the previous year? And in some cases, someone does have some significant changes and it makes sense to reapply the next year. In some cases, maybe it should be a few years out until, you know, to give them the chance to make, perhaps it was they needed more managerial experience, you know. That's pretty hard to do overnight. So sometimes it takes a few years. But we do look at every, you know, reapplication as a new application. So people shouldn't feel that, you know, there's this horrible shame or whatnot. And if they weren't admitted a lot, I tell people, look, a lot more people are not admitted than are admitted. And it is a competitive pool and good for you for putting yourself out there. And just because you weren't admitted this year doesn't mean you won't be admitted in the future.
I assume that when you look at a reapplicant application, you're not viewing it with any kind of a prejudice, or certainly negative prejudice. It might even be like, well, this person really wants to come to Wharton. But you are looking for, you do want to see some significant improvement and change. Sure. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
It is. And we will ask someone who did not interview that person, their first attempt, we'll ask someone different to interview them, because sometimes it's a matter of connecting with someone differently and they can bring a new perspective to that person.
Okay. What do you see in your magic crystal balls for Wharton's executive MBA program?
Well, yes. What we see, if we could be have the ability to be that wise, it would be really what is reflected in the economy. I've always told folks that, you know, when you see Wharton, you see the reflection of the global economy and the business world, because our professors are so engaged, and so we are not reacting to what's going on there. As the economy changes, our professors are so much a part of it, and our students, particularly, of course, in our EMBA program, because they're in back and forth doing it, we kind of have a little microcosm of what's happening there. So we listen to our students, and we will always, first and foremost, make sure that the Wharton School is you know, doing the top research and in the depth and breadth that we're able to do it, which is amazing, and that our students are bringing to the program what's happening in the real world. So we're making sure that what we're teaching them is hitting the mark. And our professors are amazing, because they love to learn from our students as well. The dynamics is basically 360 degrees. So the crystal ball that I would have would be, okay, the economy seems to be doing well. The Wharton School is growing and an impact, and we're getting more and more, and this is to reflect what our Dean Jeff Garrett is saying, is that public-private partnership. It's not just about these B-school kind of paths that we've always seen. There's just more opportunities there, and at the University of Pennsylvania, being the amazing institution it is with so many different schools, the partnerships are just going to grow.
Okay,
we're
great.
Seeing a growing presence on our West Coast campus as well, now bringing a second cohort of full-time MBA students out. Yeah. Very, very popular. A lot of them want to be there. So we really are, you know, spanning the country and the globe. We won't be going anywhere from there. We have a large investment there. We've been there almost 20 years. And if anything...
It's beautiful there. It's a gorgeous location.
Thank you.
I visited there with the AGAC conference last year. It was magnificent.
I don't know how they get any work done on that campus.
It's the special waters that they have in the snack room.
We have wonderful integration between East and West. As far as our executive students, we're seeing some of that integration with our full-time students in terms of mixers and global modular courses and so forth. So I think that if anything, you'll see the power of the Wharton brand expand. We do have a campus in Beijing where it's a research facility and also an alumni hub. So a lot of activities happening there as well.
Okay, great. And I assume you think that's going to grow. Okay. What parting words of advice, or what would you have liked me to ask you before we wrap this up?
I would like to reemphasize the engagement factor, engaging with the admissions team. We will chat with you. You should interview before you submit your application. That's another missed opportunity that we see. So really read those instructions on our website that really say, come visit. Because when we interview someone, you spend a day on campus with it. We interview on Fridays and Saturdays when the students are in session. Take advantage of that. If you know that you want to start your MBA program in May of 2019, we want to see you on campus. And so you'll spend time one-on-one with a member of the admissions team. You'll have lunch with the students and you'll sit in on the class. And if at the end of the day you're feeling charged up, like I could see myself doing that, that it's a good thing. Definitely.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's, you know, the applicant would really get a window into the program, and, you know, I'm sure that you folks are both excellent in marketing the program and also presenting it fairly, but you're going to have a different perspective than the students who are actually in it. Mm-hmm. And they get, you know, I mean, this is not that you're trying to hide anything or portray things incorrectly. It's just a different perspective. And the opportunity to speak with students in the setting, I think, is fantastic. And I think anybody applying to this program who would not take advantage of your offer to meet and talk with them before actually submitting an application is just making a big mistake. It's free. So
I agree. And I would just add, and I encourage everybody, as I'm sure Diane does as well, I say do this for any school you're considering. You know, it's a large investment of time and money, and there are a lot of programs out there, and you want to make sure it's a good fit. So
yeah,
visit the campus, sit in on a class, talk with our alumni, talk with our current students, talk with our faculty, our admissions team. You know, you really want to experience it as much as you can for any school that you're considering.
I know, if we bought a car, it would be a lot less expensive and we'd always take it for a test drive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Barb and I are so fortunate because, we're here to share the process to apply and so forth. But our students and alumni, the minute the applicants engage with them, you know, it kind of makes our job easy because.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really amazing. And actually, just to add, when someone may come for a class visit, they'll obviously get to talk to current students and faculty, but oftentimes they get to talk to alumni at a class visit because our alums can come back and audit classes mm-hmm. at any time in their life at no charge.
Oh,
so
wow.
A lot of times when somebody comes to visit, we have alumni that are also in the class. And I think that's a wonderful benefit.
Absolutely. Barbara and Diane, I really enjoyed chatting with you and gaining a deeper understanding of the Wharton MBA for Executives. Where can a listener learn more about the Wharton Executive MBA program?
Sure. Yeah, our website is executivemba.wharton.upenn.edu.
Okay. We're going to include a link in the show notes to that site, and that will be at accepted.com/283. Again, that's accepted.com/283. We'll have a link to the Wharton EMBA site, just in case you didn't jot it down. Listener, thank you, too, for joining Diane Sharp, Barbara Kraft, and me for Mission Straight Talk's 283rd episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. And thanks also to our sponsor, Accepted's free guide, ACEMBA. This succinct guide will help you navigate the road to an executive MBA acceptance. Download your copy at www.accepted.com/ACEMBA. That's ACEEMBA. We'll also link to it from our show notes at accepted.com/283. Thanks again for listening. This is Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.